Ranger Brad, I'm a scientist. I don't believe in anything.
Change has come to America.
The truth is out there.
Some alien race to come down and threaten us.
The military industrial complex.
A highly funded yet unofficial government agency.
I've now been in 57 states.
From the heartland of America, this is PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert, and welcome to the bunker, everybody. It's July 22nd, 2009, and it's a lovely rainy day here in central Indiana.
The birds don't seem to mind. If you hear the noise, it's because we've got the windows open. Thanks to global cooling, we are enjoying a nice, nice, comfortable evening here in the middle of July in central, in the Midwestern United States.
It's so, all these carbon offsets.
That's right. Thanks to Senator Lugar for selling those carbon offsets. We're enjoying a very pleasant and comfortable July evening here in Indiana. So welcome. And actually, the birds are enjoying the fact that Sharon refilled the feeders yesterday. So those little piggy sparrows are just fighting and squawking over what's going on out there. So anyway,
occasionally you will hear Sam in the background making little noises as he cleans his toenails.
Dachshunds are very vocal animals. They have a language all their own.
He doesn't bark much, but he makes a lot of sounds.
Yeah, he does. He does. So anyway, thanks for being here. And we got a lot of ground to cover once again this evening. As
a
we
lot
take
of
a
things to talk about. There was the solar eclipse that happened. The show probably went up so late last night. We got involved in putting the fence up in the back.
Yeah.
And, in fact, I got overheated, which when you have fibromyalgia, for some reason there's something weird about the ability to cool off. And once I get hot, I can't cool off very quickly. And so I actually got kind of sick last night and came in the house. But you continued. You soldiered on, and you finished putting up the fence, and it looks great. I'm so happy with it. But because of all that, you didn't get the show finished quite as soon as we'd wanted. So by the time it got up there, the solar eclipse was over.
Yeah, that was in the show notes. So by the time you heard the show last night, the solar eclipse, the longest of the century, was already passed.
Not that we could
see it here in the Western Hemisphere, but in India, Nepal, and China, they were able to see it.
In India, there was a stampede.
Really?
I'm looking at this story. At Asia Pacific News, there was a stampede on the banks of the Ganges in Varanasi City, which is, I guess, one of their holy cities, as thousands gathered to watch the solar eclipse. This early in the morning, millions across India, they were getting in the Ganges. Some of the women were burying their kids in the mud by the river because they believed that somehow that was going to, if the child was sick, that that was going to heal them. There were devotees that were worshiping the sun. One devotee said, "We feel that when God is angry, he creates some miracles to remind his people to work truthfully and shun violence. So for us, this is a reminder that one day this world will end, and we should strive every day to fulfill God's wishes." Well, good on him, because that's true. But I'm sorry, getting down there and worshiping the sun is part of it is not the way to go.
Wrong God there. Wrong small g God. So right response, but directed at the wrong deity.
Yeah, the stampede was so severe that one person died.
Huh. Well, oh, by the way, we also talked about that comet impact on Jupiter.
Yes.
And it was, in fact, and I learned this last night after the show as well, that it occurred 15 years to the day after Shoemaker-Levy hit Jupiter.
I said 15 years last night, but I hadn't realized it was
to the day.
Well, you know, interesting. Yeah. We have a hat dude sent me a little note.
Yes.
Cool dude, hat dude, cool. He needs his own little theme song. He sent me a little note, and he did say, come to think of it, he did say to the day, and I'd forgotten that.
Okay.
He said it was 15 years. But the number 15, as you saw in my reply to him, is one of the numbers that's considered very important to those who sort of take the left-hand path, the occult path, the anti-God path, the Luciferian path, whatever you want to call it. And among the many things about 15 is that it's the combination of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
More is a 7. Okay, wait. I'm
if you add 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Okay. Yeah, I've been doing math all day long, and my brain is shut down.
1, 2, 3, that's 6. Uh-huh. 4, 5, that's 9.
Okay, got it. Okay, now I can understand. Well, you know, and you sent back to Hat Dude a little square, like a 9.
Yeah, magic square.
Magic square, which is, was it Kabbalistic or is it Freemasonic?
Magic squares are followed in Kabbalah and in, oh gosh, many of the occult science, occult religions. I hate to use the word science, but science being knowledge, okay.
Mm-hmm.
I actually found that, and I linked to it in my reply, at a website by a guy who is a Mason.
Right. In fact,
he calls that
the
Freemasonic magic square, and he goes through the explanation of as to why it has a secret compass and square in it.
Huh.
We'll link to that.
Yeah,
but,
definitely will.
Lots of other things to talk about that have to do with science.
Well, and while we're on the subject of Freemasons, just let me divert for a second because I found an interesting article at the Conspiracy Archive, Terry Melanson's website, which of course
PID News this morning.
Right, which is where the archive of all the excellent articles by Paul and Philip Collins are kept.
Great website.
It really is because Terry, like the Collins brothers, is evidence based. He's not speculating and getting into histrionics, but he pointed out from a publication by the Freemasons in 1969 that the Masons were very proud of the fact that many of the astronauts and officials working for NASA back in the late 60s were Freemasons. Buzz Aldrin was a 32nd degree Freemason. In fact, he took a Freemasonic flag to the moon and brought it back. It's now on display at the House of the Temple in Washington, D.C., which is their headquarters of the Scottish Rite. In addition, the manager of the Apollo program, Command and Service Modules, was a 33rd degree Freemason, a gentleman named Kenneth Kleinknecht. And he wrote, and I quote now, "The mission of the craft being Freemasonry, has always been one of salvation, but until now its field of endeavor was the individual and bringing of him to the light. Masonry cannot think of these terms now. All men everywhere must hear our message or all men everywhere will perish."
When did he write that?
1969, following the lunar landing.
6 and 9, that's 15.
Which was the year they landed on the moon.
Yes.
Ding!
Ding!
That's the sound of the light bulb.
Be sure to read 2001 and 2010. I keep saying that, but if you can't, watch the movies at least, but the books are better.
Yes. Okay, so back to science.
Back to science!
And by the way, the audio clip at the beginning of the program tonight was lifted from our favorite movie of all time, or at least one of them, The Lost Skeleton of Cadavra. If you haven't seen it, find it. It's worth your time.
And if you find some atmospherium,
please let us know.
Because, atmospherium can really, it can really advance science.
That's right. Some actual advances in the field of science.
Oh, you. Oh, well. On to science. What I want to talk about just for a few minutes is earlier this month, President Obama nominated a Christian to head up the National Institutes of Health.
Well, that's counterintuitive.
That is. Dr. Francis Collins, who calls himself an evangelical Christian, and you'll understand why I say calls himself that here in a few minutes. He used to run the Human Genome Project. He is the one who shepherded that thing through in record time, got the whole human genome done. He had 2,000 scientists under his control, whatever you want to say. He was charge over them and over a huge budget, and he brought it in under budget on time, which is impressive.
Because the government never does anything under budget.
Exactly.
And
they
rarely
never
on time.
Do.
Yep.
And so now to have a $40 billion budget at the NIH and lots of grants to divvy out, he's going to have a lot of power, and that's why it's important that Obama, and why you have to ask, why is Obama putting a Christian, someone who is a self-proclaimed Christian, at the head of this? Well, if you take a look at Dr. Collins' beliefs, they depart from mine. He doesn't quite interpret Genesis the way you and I would, Derek. He imputes his own scientific prejudice mm-hmm. into what God did. In other words, he doesn't quite take Genesis at face value.
Mm-hmm.
He makes assumptions based on what he believes must have happened because that's the only way it fits into his worldview.
Which, of course, is that man is the evolutionary product of billions of years.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
He said. In fact, he has a website, an organization that he calls BioLogos, which is mm-hmm. life and logos, the word of God.
Mm-hmm.
So he is implying that God spoke everything. He kickstarted all of it by speaking the universe into being, and then sat back, leaned in his, back in his little chair, and watched it all happen, as if he had other things to do. And was sort of like waiting for us to come around. This is the very thing Arthur C. Clarke talks about in those two books, that it's another civilization that is extremely advanced, a godlike civilization that came down and mm-hmm. sort of kickstarted things.
Sort of.
Yeah. I mean, Clarke is saying that something was here,
mm-hmm.
and this other civilization came down and sort of urged us along down the path, I find you, I'm going to improve you. But Francis Collins believes is that God did not create man in his own image. Genesis says that God actually formed man out of the mud.
Right.
No, that's not what Collins believes, even though that's what the Bible says very clearly in the original language. He believes that God spoke the universe into being, sat back, watched it, and waited the millions of years until, oh, look at that. Those apes have started talking. That's great. You know what? I think now that's a suitable vessel for me to put my spirit into and make him in my own image.
Mm-hmm. That is not an uncommon belief among theistic evolutionists.
You can't interpret Genesis that way.
It's very
clear that not only that God made man with his own hands. He didn't speak man into being. He created man with his hands. Mm-hmm. Everything else he spoke into being. But it's very clear when it says, and it begat progeny after its own kind,
after its own kind.
It's in there over and over again.
When
I was a kid, I thought, why is he even bothering here? Why does he keep putting in after its kind?
To make it clear that you didn't get one kind developing from another kind. You didn't mm-hmm. have amphibians that suddenly gave birth to birds.
Right.
Yeah. In Matthew, I believe Matthew 19, and I'd have to go back and look now, but it's the passage in Matthew where Jesus is talking about marriage. And he says, when God created them, male and female, not when God discovered them, male and female, he decided the best way for them to live was, one man, one woman. No, when God created them, male and female. So as a...
Matthew 19:4,
right. As a theistic evolutionary, was Jesus misinformed about the nature of the creation of mankind? Was he just dumbing it down so the apostles could understand? How far do you take that when you start interpreting what Jesus said, well, he didn't really mean that.
Exactly. And what pages do you just start ripping out? This doesn't fit my worldview. This doesn't fit my worldview. They're gone.
Because of modern science, we know that this couldn't be true. So we'll have to ignore this and leave this part out. And you know, the other aspect of this is that the whole divine watchmaker model
mm-hmm.
is very convenient for scientistic types
mm-hmm.
who don't want to have to deal with difficult questions like if God is all-knowing and all-powerful and ultimately just and good, why do bad things happen to good people? Well, if you understand or begin to grasp the divine counsel model that Mike Heiser and his colleagues have researched and documented through the Bible and other ancient Hebrew writings, Jewish writings, and the pre-Christian era,
mm-hmm.
you begin to understand that there is a literal war taking place on this planet all around us, and that for the time being, the rebels have dominion over the planet, with the exception of God's chosen people. But we're still living behind enemy lines. That explains a lot of what happens around us. You know, from our, to our human senses and our human sense of what's right and wrong, what's good and bad, what's just and what's unjust, a lot of there is a lot of injustice, a lot of many things that are unfair that happen in this world. People who suffer for no apparent reason.
Well, there are, but you can also ask,
which is not the way God designed it.
No, not at all. But it very quickly went that way in the Garden of Eden.
Right.
You can also ask the question, and before that probably, because Lucifer fell, I believe, before that Garden of Eden event happened.
Sure.
You could also ask the question as a scientist, and it has been asked over and over again. It was one of my test questions in evolution class back at IU. Why does altruism exist within the animal kingdom?
Mm-hmm.
If your whole job in evolution is to pass your genes on.
Exactly.
And superior genes are supposed mm-hmm. to win out. Why would any species, you know...
See, this
those
is
are
what
firecrackers.
This is what happens when you get buy one get five free in the week before the 4th of July.
If you're just tuning in, those are firecrackers.
No, let's pretend we're Geraldo Rivera. We're under fire.
We're here in Afghanistan. We've found Osama bin Laden. No, why would altruism exist at all? Why would any species voluntarily give up the idea of, okay, I'm not going to be able to mate. I'm going to work it out so that you can do it. And it happens in the animal kingdom all the time.
Right, right.
For instance, why would a dog why would a dog allow, say, a tiger cub?
To come nurse.
And that kind of stuff happens all the time.
Sure. And of course, we see it in human society all the time as well. We see a lot of bad in human society too. But if survival of the fittest is really the law that governs all of behavior, and that we are here because we are the most fit, because we ruthlessly clawed our way to the top of the evolutionary ladder by putting our own self-interests first, and not just ours as a species, but ours, the species becomes stronger, so the theory goes, because the strongest genes rose to the top,
mm-hmm.
which meant that the strongest had to survive while the weakest were left out in the cold and kicked out of the camp.
Mm-hmm.
If you are an atheist, if there is nothing more to this world than what you can grab with your hands in the here and now, then that has to be the only logical way to live, to get whatever you can get away with. And I've never heard a convincing counter-argument to that. I mean, there isn't one.
If indeed that is the way we're supposed to live our lives, then what good is the rule of law?
It's there to serve. Well, you know, the argument would be it's just there to serve the purpose of just keeping enough order that we can all live together in peace. Well, fine, but then survival of the fittest.
What gives you the right to tell me that's what your law is?
Right, each man does what's right in his own eyes.
Do as thou wilt shalt be the whole of the law.
Exactly. It's a cost benefit analysis. What's the risk of getting caught doing this? If the risk is low enough and the benefits are high enough, I'll do it regardless of what, you know, is ethically right.
Well, let me go on and tell you another reason that I wanted to take a look at this guy who probably will be heading up the Institute of Health. Not only is it Obama's sort of nod to the conservative factions out there, mm-hmm. Christian and non-Christian.
Which he's been doing for quite a while.
Blue Dog Democrats are also pretty conservative for mm-hmm. Democrats. And they are standing against him in this health care reform bill.
Right.
In fact, he's going to be talking in just a few minutes, so we're going to have to finish up here so we can get in there and see what he has to say. But I wanted to see what else might be going on. Well, again, you know, Dr. Francis was in Francis Collins was in charge of the Human Genome Project. And this is what he had to say just recently at a forum that was sponsored by the Pew Trust. I think probably, he said, within 5 years, the $1,000 genome will be a reality, and then that will make a very convincing case for including it as part of medical care So the information is in the medical record when you need it. You can already, for $400, send your money to one of these direct-to-consumer marketing companies, and they'll tell you what your risk is for about 20 different diseases. In other words, he sees that within the next 5 years, and I think this is his personal goal as a physician, as a scientist, he wants to have everybody's individual DNA fingerprint on the medical record from birth. And the reason for that is so that our medical care can be tailored to us. And he says right here that it's cost effective.
And of course, your risk at certain diseases would then factor into government decisions as to what sort of health care you'll be entitled to under a government-controlled health care plan.
It's no coincidence. I think a lot of conservatives are going to latch onto the fact that he's a Christian. He's one of us. Mm-hmm. No. He was head of the Human Genome Project. And he's sort of a believer in Genesis, but not really.
Yeah. And if you throw out Genesis, and I have some disagreements with the answers in Genesis ministry, you know, Ken Ham.
I like him, but I do too.
And because at least as far as this goes, let's put it this way, especially because of this point that he made very clear at a conference we attended some years ago. If you toss out Genesis and the creation story, you toss out the foundation of the whole of the Bible.
Exactly.
Because without a literal fall from grace, there was no need for a Savior. And then Jesus' death on the cross becomes simply a tragedy. Nothing more.
If you toss out Genesis, you miss the whole supernatural battle and why it's there.
Exactly. That is the foundation for everything. Because if you take that out, then the Old Testament is a series of bloody battles instigated by a cruel God for unknowable reasons. When you understand the divine counsel concept, understand that this was literally a battle for every human soul, yours, mine, everyone who's ever lived, then it makes a lot more sense.
That's right. Well, we're already over 20 minutes. Where'd that go?
Really, really quickly.
I have one last thing, unless you do.
I've got one quick thing, too.
You do your thing.
We're talking about science, by the way. You remember just a few weeks ago, we were told that the evolutionists had found the missing link, the game changer. This would finally, once and for all, prove Darwin's theory correct.
You remember Ida.
Little anthropoid.
My mom's name.
Yeah, that's right. Named Ida. Well, critics within the evolutionary biology sphere have...
Biology.
Yes, have...
have some.
Well, I'm a Christian. Well, I can't be a scientist. have basically let the air out of that balloon. Robert Martin of the Field Museum in Chicago says that some of the traits that were used to identify Ida as an anthropoid do not support the relationship. Won't go into the details, but essentially, and there was somebody else from the Carnegie Museum who said the same thing, that, you know, this is blown way out of proportion. Ida is not an anthropoid. She is not the missing link. In fact, they said she's just a primitive lemur. That's it, a primitive lemur. There is no link to the higher anthropoids, the higher hominids. So it didn't even take the Christians, many of whom were very upset about this, all the hoopla that surrounded this big story, National Geographic Channel at the the same National Geographic Channel that was running, aliens from outer space all day Sunday. Yeah, it's not all that. But here's the thing: that's of course the way this is being spun in the news. It's not; it's being forgotten by the news. We heard the big hoopla, and it's like an attorney in a courtroom setting, saying something really incendiary and inflammatory about the defendant, something that the evidence doesn't support, and then having the other attorney say, objection, okay, strike that from the record. But, of course, the jury still remembers.
But they've been instructed to forget it.
They've been instructed to forget, but they, yeah, but
no, you can't.
All we'll remember was that, okay, they found the missing link. Well, not.
Well, before we sign off for the evening, I just want to end on a cheerful note.
Good.
You'll be glad to know that according to TG Daily, the end of the world has been postponed until Christmas.
Well, that's good news.
That's right.
We have time to shop.
The Large Hadron Collider is not going to be turned on until the end of the year. It's been postponed until winter of 2009. CERN attributed the delay to a number of technical difficulties, including vacuum leaks and leaks, sorry, not leaks, vacuum leaks in two sectors of the LHC that had been cooled down to 80 degrees Kelvin.
Huh. Well, yeah, they can't have those vacuums leaking, otherwise it sucks in the whole of Switzerland, so that's
I think it's really interesting that they just keep, you know, they had this big hoopla last year. They supposedly turned it on for a test, broke everything, and now they've just continued. They've even undergone new management and all kinds of money. They've fixed everything, and it's still not working.
Yeah.
Is it really not working?
Or was it never intended to work? Or
is it really working and they don't want to let us know?
Well, who knows? But to borrow a line from Armageddon, here we are sitting on a multi-billion dollar atomic generator built by the lowest bidder. So, well, tomorrow night, I'll be recording the View from the Bunker program for this coming weekend, while at the same time streaming it live over the internet with Taylor Kent, the Snarky Avenger, a.k.a. the Fandom Snark.
Ah.
We're going to call the program Peering into Snarkness for tomorrow night. So it'll be live at ustream.tv. I'll put a link to it in the show notes at pidradio.com. But then the recorded version of it, so you can come back and listen to it later, will be up on the weekend.
And since Derek and I would like to have some quality time together each evening, tomorrow night, because he's going to be on during that, we will not be producing a PID radio show.
But we'll have an archive
night.
Show.
But we'll have an archive show up for you. We always try to pick out a really good one. And then Friday night we'll be back, unless, of course, you know, something happens.
Yeah, God willing.
God willing. And the creek don't rise.
That's right. And until then, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
On demand.
This is PID Radio.